Welcome to a Prevent Connect podcast, where we explore the prevention of violence against women. This is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault.
Hello, this is David Lee from Prevent Connect. I am going to be talking with several men who have signed the recently released statement, Men Speak Out About Sexist Coverage of Rape, A Call to Action. And I'm really pleased to have been able to join over 40 men who are leaders in the efforts to be able to address men's violence against women in this country, to be able to have a call to men and be able to take some action. And this statement was just released in April of 2011. I'll read just the first paragraph. In the struggle to stop rape and all forms of men's violence against women, it is time for men to leave the sidelines and get in the game. One important step we can take is raise our voices and insist that the spotlight and media coverage of rape turns away from a fixation on victims and their behavior and instead focuses on abusive men and boys and the culture that produces and make excuses for them. We make this demand not only as concerned citizens and responsible members of our communities, but as men from virtually every cultural, racial, ethnic, religious background. So in this statement, it's been a really great opportunity for men to be able to put a call to talk about how we need to really talk about not just accountability, but also the need to be able to create prevention programs and do prevent actions that are going to lead to change the norms in our community. One of the men that signed this statement that I'm really proud to have with me today is Emiliano Diaz de Leon, who is with the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault. How are you doing, Emiliano?
Doing great, David.
Well, great. Can you talk about why it was important for you to sign this statement?
Like that first paragraph says, I think I was kind of one of those men in Texas that was standing on the sideline and had been fairly silent about this particular incident here in Texas and just really felt compelled and felt tremendous responsibility as a man who works for the Texas Sexual Assault Coalition, to speak up and to join my voice with other men from around the country around this particular issue, because unfortunately it's not something that just occurs here in Texas, but in communities all over the country.
So what is it that you are calling on men to do?
Here in Texas, you know, we want to encourage boys and men to really join with those 40-plus men that you mentioned and really beginning to have conversations about masculinity and the kind of socialization that we experience as boys and men that lead to these types of acts of sexual violence, and to really begin having conversations, just as an example of that. I have a son. A lot of our conversations are about healthy relationships and being respectful both to the girls and women in his life and to the other boys and men in his life, and being nonviolent from a very early age, because he's only a year and a half, to begin having those conversations. But also being able to have those conversations with the boys and men in my life, my coworkers, my colleagues around the state, really encouraging them and providing them with the tools and resources that they need to engage in these kinds of conversations that are really important into it, to be really proactive when these kinds of things occur in their communities, to really encourage other men to speak out and to take this kind of stand. But to begin really looking at the underlying causes of this kind of behaviors and what is it that we can change within our society or within our communities, even within Texas, that contribute to these kinds of acts of sexual violence, and really begin to undo some of those things, to work to unravel some of those things that have existed in communities for a very long time. It's really, again, supporting and encouraging other boys and men to engage in those conversations, to take action, to really kind of think about how we can support the girls and women in our lives and have conversations with them and work together to end all forms of sexual violence in Texas. And we're incorporating it as part of this month's task force meeting, and that we're having an in-person meeting here in Austin later on this month, and really talking about using this as an opportunity for us to kind of get the statement out there in terms of communities around Texas. A lot of folks are using this particular incident, the New York Times article, in their primary prevention work. It is definitely going to be a teachable moment for us. We're going to talk about the intersections of kind of racism and sexual violence and how that's played into this particular incident, and a place to talk about masculinity, you know, in terms of all of our communities here in Texas, how the media has portrayed these young men and all of these kind of different things that are going on with this particular case. It'll be fascinating, to say the least.
Great. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the work that you're doing there in Texas. I'm really glad that you're able to join with other men to be able to make this statement. Now we're going to be able to talk to another man who has signed this statement. I am talking with Michael Shaw, who is with Waypoints Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Services over in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Thank you for joining me today, Michael.
Well, thanks for having me on.
So, Michael, could you talk about why you chose to sign this statement?
Well, it's a relatively, I guess, two parts, a relatively personal part with when the event happened, the rape of the girl in Texas. I became aware of it when someone sent me an email that had a response to the New York Times article. And I had a summary of it, kind of knew what was going on, and I could not get myself to open that email and explore it. I was not in a place emotionally where I could look at it, think about it. And then some of it was because of the work that I'm doing. I wasn't in the space with the work, was busy at the time, or I just didn't feel like I could enter into that because I knew if I opened it up, I would have to do something about it. I have an 11-year-old daughter, and it felt personal to me. Then there was the other part of my brain, which was my commitment in this movement is to act, to do something. And I felt like I needed to do something. And I actually started, without having read the article, the New York Times article, started it was either going to be an essay or an editorial or something. I just started writing. And what I started writing was the theme or the title of it was, what do I do now? And it was in the context of how I think about and talk about talking to my daughter about the reality of the world around us. How do I talk to the boys and men around her? What is my responsibility in that? And how do I think about, as a father, the reality of this world that we live in, this cultural environment that we live in, that would allow something like that to happen, and then allow the victim blaming associated with how people respond to rape in our world. So I had these two things going on in my head, which was I'm not emotionally prepared for this because it's too much. At that point, there were too many things going on emotionally. I didn't want to trip that trigger, but also that part where I felt like I needed to do something. So I left that email and that in my email box, in my inbox, and I started that essay and just left it there and didn't do anything with it hadn't opened it up until I got an email from Debbie Tucker at the National Center on Domestic and Sexual Violence saying we've been invited to participate in this statement and want to see if you'd be willing to do it representing the National Center. And that felt like the opportunity to, and I read the statement, thought it was a very powerful statement and addressed the nuances of the discussion, but it addressed it in a way of calling me into action, calling me to engage in the discussion and to think about it and to take responsibility for the New York Times response, the media's response in general, but the cultural response in particular. It gave voice to that thing that was in my head. It allowed me to open up the email, to read the article, to get more into the story, and feel like I was at least engaged in a process of thinking about how to respond, to get that stuff that was inside my head and inside my heart out. That was the reason why I signed under the statement.
Thank you for sharing such a personal story. And in this statement, it's a call to action and asking men to be able to do something beyond just looking at the situation. So what are you looking for that men can do and what you're calling on action for men to take?
I guess I would think about it at multiple levels. Those men that are engaged in this work on a regular basis, I would want to expect and challenge us, challenge myself, to get outside of my own head, to jump into it and organize and do the thing that we say we're going to do, which is organize as men around the issues of sexual violence and domestic violence and challenge the cultural norms associated with that and do it. Do it continuously and do it without ego and just be there on behalf of survivors. Not just do the things that we can do to prevent it, but also be there to support survivors in the reality of the world that survivors are existing in. That would be what I would challenge men that are involved and engaged in the movement, particularly around stepping away from our own egos related to doing that. Then I would also challenge those men that are not engaged in the movement, those men that have not even conceptualized the things that are being presented in this statement, to be thoughtful, to challenge themselves, to prepare themselves to get engaged, particularly during Sexual Awareness Month, to go ask questions, to understand the reality of the world that women are living in without making it about what happens to us men if we do this, but to ask the questions, to go to programs and institutions that are functioning as advocacy or prevention programs and say, what can I do to help? Be involved in whatever activities are going on locally. See, what can I do to help? What can I do to make it less likely that this will ever happen again? Start taking those steps, because the way I look at the world, I think about the world and generationally, while I might not be able to have the truth that Andrea Dworkin asked for right now, tomorrow, today, what I know I can do and what I encourage other men to do is take the steps necessary to make it more likely that 10 years down the road, 20 years down the road, 50 years down the road, we'll have an environment that is free of sexual violence and domestic violence and dating violence and all the forms of that gender-based violence and sexist violence and all those cultural norms that makes it possible for something as atrocious as this event in Texas, and that makes it less likely that the media and the response to it is so disconnected to the lives of survivors. That would be my challenge, is to, whatever it is, if it's go to a Take Back the Night rally or step around in somebody's shoes or go volunteer someplace, or to just ask your partner or ask your girlfriend or your friend that happens to be female, what do you think about this? And to be self-reflective about it. Those little steps are the things that get us moving forward.
Thank you very much, Michael, for sharing. And it's great as we got a chance to hear from several men who signed this statement, and would encourage people to read the statement and for men to be able to take action to speak out against sexual violence and not participate in the victim blaming, but instead look to ways that holding men accountable, and more importantly, in creating a new culture where we'll see violence against women is something that's not permitted, and we create a world that's really truly about gender respect. So thank you very much for joining us for today's podcast.
Thank you for listening to this Prevent Connect podcast. Prevent Connect is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The views presented on Prevent Connect are not necessarily the views of the United States government, the CDC, or CalCASA. To learn more about Prevent Connect, visit www.preventconnect.org. For more information about CalCASA's mission or to show your support, visit calcasa.org. That's CALCASA.org.